Lydia Hutchinson is the editor and publisher of Performing Songwriter magazine, and she's talking to me from her office in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Lydia.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for talking to me.
Absolutely.
Regarding Sean Colvin, what do you recall about the earliest buzz on Sean Colvin? How was she first noticed, and what were people saying?
The first buzz I remember about Sean would have been, it was after Steady On was released, and it was such a seminal album out there. It was actually, as far as when I first started hearing about her, she had already won her Grammy, so it was probably around 1991. And I think what she did at that time was she started a whole trend coming out of particularly that Boston, New England area. There was a style that she had that a lot of the young women singer-songwriters were kind of springboarding off of and finding their own voice through. And that's when I personally remember first hearing her. There was a bar on Second Avenue here in Nashville called Laurel's Oyster Bar, and I was sitting there, and I heard this incredibly rhythmic and this beautiful music being played, and there was a cassette that was propped up next to the tape deck, and it was Steady On, and I remember writing the name down and going to the record store the next day and getting it. And right after that was when there was just this undercurrent of talk about Sean in kind of the music circles. And that's when she, was really touring and getting her music out there on a wider level.
Right. Well, you made reference to a certain style that you said other singer-songwriters seem to be using as a springboard or emulating somehow. How would you elaborate on that? How would you describe what that was?
Sean's style, it all had to do with a very rhythmic guitar playing, and at the same time mixing that with really personal and confessional lyrics. And then in performance, there was no differentiation between her vocals and her guitar. She saw that as one unit. So her voice would play off of her guitar, and her guitar would, the rhythms of it would lead where her voice would go, for instance. So there was this style that she had in performance that made her performance just, it was almost like a class to sit and watch her. She would, I remember in that period seeing her several times, and she would go so deep into it. She would like close her eyes and her head would go back, and she would just sing. And while she was playing, she would, her foot would be tapping, and she would completely enter the song. And I think that style became something that particularly the singer-songwriters that were coming out of, and I say that New England area, because it was such fertile ground, particularly in the early 90s, you could see it in a lot of them a lot of those people who were really trying to find their own style with mixing their guitar work and their vocals, and then certainly the lyric writing, that confessional lyric writing.
So let's pick up on that a little bit. In the line of singer-songwriters, whose torch does she pick up as a writer?
As a writer, Sean would be the first to say that her first wave of influence was Joni Mitchell, of course. And that's where that influence came in, that really personal... The personal lyric writing, and I also see it in a lot of poets, in the Sylvia Plaths or the Emily Dickinsons. So I see that in the lyric writing that Sean's always had, and then the guitar playing style was very much from Richard Thompson, and her whole style. I remember watching that too, when I'm not a guitarist, but like many people, I have a guitar, and I would after I'd watch her shows, I would go home and try to play things like she played, and I realized after a while it really was simple. It because her left hand was doing very simple things. It's her right hand that was carrying the rhythm and muting and hammering, and that's where the groove comes from and the rhythm comes from, and it makes it sound complicated, and it's not. It's beautifully simple, and I think a lot of that came from Joni Mitchell also, with the tunings and that kind of muting style that she did. But Richard Thompson also had a huge influence there.
Well, she played in his band for a time. Is that not right?
I believe she did, or else she opened for him.
Mm-hmm. Lyrically, I mean, you mentioned the sort of confessional style, which is a bit of a broad brushstroke there. What themes do you think emerge most strongly from her lyrics? And feel free to give some examples of songs that might paint the picture for the listener a little bit.
The confessional style of lyric writing, example-wise, I would say, well, it always came off. It's very personal. It's very vulnerable. Like that was the theme of it, was just being very honest and truthful and vulnerable, which is, I think, why she connected so much with her listeners, because I think it's all of our dream to be able to be that vulnerable, quite honestly. And sometimes she said things that a lot of us think, you know, but as an artist and as a songwriter is able to put it to words, and that's the beauty and the importance of songwriters, I think, and what they give us as listeners. They go out on a line emotionally, and they put it out there for us, and she certainly has in everything from, gosh, I remember being so moved by her song "The Story," which was, you know, about her family, if I Were Brave was beautiful. I'd Say I'm Sorry Now, just telling your child, you know, you're going to let them down, and let me just go on and say I'm sorry now. I mean, how many parents feel that way, but how many know how to find words to say that or just go on and say it, you know? So I think that's what she just always seemed very fearless to me in that way of putting things out there that a lot of us would be scared to say.
Mm-hmm. If you were trying to describe Sean Colvin's voice, what adjectives would you use?
I think one thing I remember hearing from other singers was that they thought Sean had such perfect pitch. And vocally, I think the fact that she can kind of go anywhere with her voice, she can follow her instrument, you know, and she can follow her mood with her voice. And I think that's why it's so dynamic, and I think that's why it's appealing and it's comfortable and it's more than easy to listen to. You know, it's flawed in like the most wonderful ways that make things interesting.
Can you think of an example of that, or just on occasion that happens?
Basically the fact that she doesn't, in a live performance, she'll sing songs differently than on a recorded version. You know, she's not somebody who sticks to a record in performance. And I think for so many of us, that's why we go to a performance. I think of, you know, a comparison to somebody like James Taylor, who has performed for so, so many years the same songs. And he can really mix them up and do fun things with them. And I always, you know, I found that Sean could do that too, and always made that interesting. And her performances were just always, you know, so dynamic and interesting that way. And it was because of her vocal quality also, as well as her guitar playing and her stage patter.
Yeah. So you mentioned a few tracks that were sort of important to you, and I don't know if you had a chance to think about the question that I sent about other important tracks from any other albums that, you know, again, might just sort of turn the listener's attention to, you know, certain songs and pointing out things that you think stand out about the presentation of particular tracks for you?
I tend to see her work in terms of the albums versus the individual songs. And, you know, on each album, there's certain songs that I am drawn to. I happen to be drawn to waltzes, you know, to three-quarter songs. But, you know, if you just take Steady On, which was, you know, kind of so many people's introduction to Sean, certainly your hardcore fans, the track, the story, it was always one of my favorite. And of course, it's a, you know, it's in 3/4, which that's just a personal thing. But then just her writing on Steady On, that was a real, you know, that was, it was very profound. It was, Cry Like an Angel was profound on that one. And then Fat City, that album, I remember where I was the day I got it. It was, you know, a lot of us that grew up at a certain time, we would buy an album and go home and lie on our beds while it was playing and read the liner notes and listen to it all and look at the pictures. And I remember the day that I got that, it was just in CD form. And I remember listening to that, and those songs, I remember how that day felt, the day that I heard some of those songs. And some I had heard one time before when she performed at Telluride, and they were such strong songs, and there were two in particular. It was Polaroids and Orion in the Sky Hit Me. And I remembered the lyrics. I remembered some of the lyrics to them from just having heard her perform them once live. And then to get the album, I remember looking forward to that. And that album was one of her strongest to me, too, Fat City. And maybe that was a certain period of my life. It was the year that I started, you know, my magazine, and she was my second interview. She was our second cover. And so that kind of has, you know, a lot of meaning to me on that one. And then I remember A Few Small Repairs. I interviewed her. I was in, I met her in Memphis and interviewed her. She was opening for Jackson Browne at the time, and we were talking backstage during that time, and I remember that was a that album represents a period of her life that was, it was post-divorce. I remember it was darker, and it of course had her Sonny Came Home, a big hit for her. And then Whole New You had this completely different feel, and I interviewed her in Austin at her house for that one, and I remember the feeling after that one. She was still kind of amazed that it even happened. She had her child at that point and was in a happy place, and I remember discussing with her the fact that so many artists, like so much of her creativity came from being in a darker place. And here she said she'd kind of lost her poetry for that period when every breath she was taking was almost poetry, you know, with her new child. And so, like, I can look at that whole album and see that period of her life, and which I love. I mean, that's the other thing about Sean, is that because she is so honest and so vulnerable, she puts it on, you know, it comes out in her art. And so you basically can... you get to know what's happening in her life or the vibe of her life through her art at that time. And that's what all of those have represented.
So neither she nor John Leventhal have much nice to say about A Whole New You now. I mean, they used terms in my interviews like wrong record, wrong time. Sean felt kind of removed from the production of it because she didn't play on it that much, and yet I'm hearing you say that in your ear it wasn't a departure or wasn't anything that seemed too far removed from her natural progression.
Yeah, I think hers and John's Leventhal's take on A Whole New You. I think it was a hard production from them, and I say this because this was what was said in the interview that I had with her at the time. It was just a tough album to make, and also, you know, the reality is it was the follow up to her commercial hit. So that's a lot of pressure for anybody to have on them to try and live up to that. And because Sean is so honest that she will be critical of her work, you know, or if not the work, the truthfulness of the fact that that was a hard album for them to make at the time. Personally, I find great value in whatever she wrote at the time, because again, it's honest and it's truthful, and it was where she happened to be at the time. And as a listener, I got something from it. You know, I don't have the same expectations that a lot of people have of, you know, wanting a certain follow-up, because it was there all along. For a lot of Sean's fans, her stuff's always been there. And there's always that to look forward to of the next insight into this piece of honesty that all of a sudden we can look at our own lives. You know, I mean, everything that was happening, even in A Few Small Repairs, I remember there was a line in one of the songs, I think it was If I Were Brave, would I be saved if I were brave and I had a baby? And that's just a painfully truthful thing to say that a lot of women in their 30s, which she was at the time, go through. You know, you're looking at that. And that's what I mean by she writes what's happening in her life at the time. That's what she knows to do. She can put some awesome rhythms to it and get the words right and put it out there, and maybe things are harder to put out there at a certain time, but as art, I find it to always be of value.
Well, let's just a couple more questions, Lydia. I really appreciate your time. Uh-huh. Let me ask you to characterize the role that John Leventhal has had in Sean's music and her success.
I think it's a great gift when two creative people cross paths. They actually find each other, like she and Leventhal did. When you find that person who makes you better at what you do, and I think, you know, certainly when they met in the early 80s, and Sean was playing around with writing, but it was, you know, it was John that would push her, and John would give her the music and she would write the lyrics to it, and that's where it started. That was the beginning of her style, and I'm quite sure that she pushed John in the same ways. You know, when one would need a push, the other one would be there to do it. And I think that's the mark of a great gift when somebody crosses your path during your life to make you better that way.
Well, let's look to the future then. You know, where do you see Sean Colvin right now, and how would you describe the place in the music scene that she might hold in the years to come?
Sean is a career artist. She will be here the same way Ricky Lee Jones is here, the same way Joni Mitchell is here. Whether or not Sean had ever had a hit with Sonny Came Home, it wouldn't matter, because she is a career artist. She has given she's given something to the music world. She has influenced people. She has almost given the green light to people to be able to write a certain way, to play a certain way. And so she's made her mark, you know, whether she knows it or not, it's a fact. And, you know, where it goes commercially, you know, I hope for her always. I hope there's another big one coming for her, because I know how great that is for somebody. But regardless of what happens, she has been vital, I think, to our music scene, and she will always have that place. And I'm looking forward to whatever her next album is. I know I will certainly appreciate it, because it's gonna offer something to me and my life and my appreciation of music. And also, it'll be fun to kind of see where she is and what's been going on in her life, because it will be right there in her song somewhere.
So you feel like you're reading a bit of her journal?
I absolutely feel like, yeah, it's her writing style is definitely, it's like reading a diary. And I mean, as a listener, I think one feels that it's truthful. And I think just having, you know, talked to Sean enough times in the past, I know that that's what she knows to write, is what's happening in her life. And that's it's a brave and wonderful thing to offer out there. You know, it's hard for as many songwriters as we've interviewed and talked to. And, you know, one of my questions is just how scary it must feel to put yourself out there, to be judged. And I always, you know, I just always think that there's a real place for those people who go out on a limb to offer us art for our enjoyment. And it's their souls on the line.
Well, the classic image of the diary comes along with a little lock and key, and it feels like a bit of a secret privilege to have somebody open it up for you.
Absolutely, it's a privilege to be able to have someone open it up for us, and I think for songwriters, it's the greatest gift to have somebody listen to what they create for them. You know, I think for songwriters in general, a huge fear that people have, you know, when I talk to songwriters, is the thought that what if they write the greatest song in the world and nobody hears it? You know, and that's a very profound fear. You know, I think that the more that we all can just open up and listen to what people have to say, we're going to learn a lot about them. And Sean kind of makes it easy. You know, she puts it out there in a enjoyable and rhythmic way, and you feel like somebody's just being very vulnerable and honest with you.
Has a Sean Colvin tune brought a tear to your eye?
Oh, at certain times in my life, I'm quite sure. Mm-hmm. I'm quite sure. You know, if it hits a chord of what I'm going through in my life, absolutely. And she has the power to do that. And I'm not too many years younger than her, but so she was, you know, kind of just a step ahead of something that I was thinking about maybe or going through. So in a good way, in the best way, yeah.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say or want to rephrase before we shut the machine off, Lydia?
No, I mean, I think one of the main things that I had wanted to get across was the importance of Sean Colvin in our musical, what will be history, and what she's brought to it, and the influence that she's had. I think is very profound, and I personally am grateful for her and for her sharing her art.
Lydia Hutchinson is the editor and publisher of Performing Songwriter magazine. She talked to us from her office in Nashville. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Paul.